Spirit is in this place. You may be seated. Good morning, everyone. Isn't it great to be together? It is always great to be together. And there are 17 of us who are just returning, just got back last night from our trip to Unity Village. Oh, I cannot even tell you. It was so, so fabulous. So fabulous, in fact, that we're going to have more of those. So if you missed this round, see if these photos might inspire you a little bit. Here's what we saw pretty much every day. Gorgeous weather. That's a beautiful kind of quad area at the heart of Unity Village. And this is a picture of our wonderful group at the top of the tower. You can go up the Unity Tower now, which I'll show you a picture of in just a moment. And here's another photo. You may recognize these two people right here. Former minister Laura Bennett and her husband Larry were with us also. And we had the pleasure of spending time with Cordy and Jane. Cordy, our ministerial student, her partner Jane. So it was just a great reunion. That gives you an idea of what we saw at night. Truly an enchanting place. And my thanks to everybody who made the trip possible, to Ed Rosequist, who coordinated it all. And really, we were just such a beautiful little group, the ways in which we cared for one another, and we got to know each other. So stay alert to future opportunities to go to Unity Village. And it was also very striking when we were there to witness all of these amazing things that have occurred, the 125th anniversary of Silent Unity, all these beautiful structures that were built, this gorgeous 1,400-acre campus. And it all began with a vision and an idea in the minds of two people, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. And so as we look ahead to our future here, it was just such an inspiring example of what can happen through the power of individual and collective intention. And we know that whatever we create here, just as is true for Unity Village, it ripples out to change the world. At Unity Renaissance, our vision is, together, a spiritually awakened world, living in peace, love, and joy. And we pursue that vision through our mission, which is, together, we transform lives that transform the world. And of course, transformation always begins within. So let's take a moment to begin our service today in prayer. I invite you to take a deep breath in and let go. And one more time, a deep breath in, and just feel spirit filling your lungs. Feel the glory of being alive today. Feeling the joy of being together. Knowing that where two or more are gathered, spirit is here. And when we gather in such multitudes, spirit is magnified manyfold. We feel that presence here in us, with us, enfolding us, and moving us forward into our highest and best dream for our future. For the blessing of celebrating all that we have, all that we are, and all that we are becoming, we are so grateful. Thank you, God. And so it is. Amen. I'm going to take just a moment to introduce our guest speaker today, who I'm so excited is here. Speaking of manifesting dreams, the first time I met Kevin Tedeschi, somebody at one of the services said, "Oh, did you know Kevin Tedeschi is here?" And I immediately became starstruck and said, "Kevin Tedeschi is here?" And I sought him out. And as soon as I got to know him, I asked him if he would come and speak with us about prosperity. He has so much wisdom to share on that topic. But let me tell you a little bit more about him. So Kevin J. Tedeschi is the director and CEO of Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment and Atlantic University, and he's responsible for managing the day-to-day operations and honestly a whole lot more. He's been involved with the Cayce organization for 40 years. That's so wonderful. He's the author of more than 25 books, including Contemporary Cayce, which we have for sale in our bookstore. And I'm sure that Kevin would be delighted to sign a copy for you if you would like that. Another of his books is The Best Dream Book Ever, and he has lectured on five continents to thousands and thousands of people. It's particularly timely to have him with us today as we approach our capital campaign, for it was Kevin Tedeschi who envisioned the Casey organization's multi-million dollar renovation and construction projects, which added 11,000 square feet to the international headquarters at Virginia Beach campus, upgraded their technological capabilities, created an on-site cafe, nice, and renovated the organization's facilities. So he'll be telling us more about that today as he shares how to manifest prosperity in life and work. And I'm just so honored to have you here, Kevin, and what a blessing you are in my life and in our lives. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to Kevin Tedeschi.
It is really my privilege to be here today with you to have the opportunity to talk a little bit about what I've come to experience in terms of manifesting prosperity in life and work. And I want to start with a funny story, so it's okay to laugh at the end of it. This is a story about a couple named Estelle and Morris, who are elderly and every year love to go to the state fair. And one year while they're there, Morris tells his wife Estelle, "You know, Estelle, I really want to take that helicopter ride." And every year Estelle says, "Well, Morris, that helicopter ride is $50. And $50 is $50. He didn't get to take the ride. So one summer they're standing there and he tells his wife again, "You know, I really want to take that helicopter ride." And she reminds him, "$50 is $50. This time the pilot of the helicopter hears them. He says, "I'll tell you what. I'll take you up for the ride of your life. I don't hear a peep out of either one of you. The ride's on me." And they thought they could do that, so they take off. And unbeknownst to the couple, this guy was a daredevil pilot. And he did all kinds of turns and maneuvers and spins around. And finally, when not one peep out of the couple, lands back down, turns back to Morris. He says, "I'm really impressed. Not one word out of either one of you." And Morris says, "Well, I nearly said something when Estelle fell out. But after all, $50 is $50. Now, the reason I tell that story is we all have to decide what's important to us. And that really ties into this idea of manifesting prosperity and economic healing in our life. Personally, I've been working with economic healing with varying levels of success for almost 40 years, ever since I got involved with the Edgar Casey material. And one of the Casey concepts is the importance of tithing, which we'll talk about more about that in just a moment. But when I heard that, I became inspired, and I adopted a foster child through Christian Children's Fund, which is today called Child Fund International. And I've actually supported that organization for the last 35 years. It's not the same foster child, not 35-year-old guy in Africa. This has been a series of children over the years. But tithing is very important. I think one of the reasons that Reverend Paul asked me to speak today is because the congregation is about to step out on faith and make some plans for its future. And I want to tell you a little bit about what we did as a Casey organization, a Casey work, that entailed $7 million worth of renovations. But it really ties into this idea of manifesting prosperity in life and work. For background information, for those who don't know, the Edgar Casey organization is a multi-million dollar organization. We have 40 departments, activities around the world. It takes $25,000 a day to keep ARE in operations. 365 days a year, day in, day out, $25,000 a day. My hair was not this color when I got the job 9 years ago. So there's a lot of finances that manifest this work. And when I became CEO 9 years ago, I became convinced that in order to prepare for the future, we needed to do some renovations. We needed to prepare for bigger people. We needed to do some technological innovations that would help change this work so we could help the more. Now, I want to say it's not about building buildings. It's about creating community. It's about reaching out with what you have to share with others, and it's about being able to help transform the world. And sometimes buildings and technology are just a part of that. Now, from the very first, there were obstacles. We had no money for a renovation project, not $1. We had no support from our neighbors. We are in a residential district neighborhood. The city imposed residential zoning on us in the 1960s. And on several previous attempts, CEOs have tried to expand the grounds and have been turned down by the neighbors and the city council. We had no support from members or the staff even. Several of the staff were against the idea. And we had no support from the board. And I started meeting with people over and over again. And I remember one of the early conversations with the board, the idea of we had no money kept coming up. And I'd have these phone conversations. We have board calls in between meetings. And again, the idea would be there's no money for such an idea. And after one of those conversations, true story, and this is the first day I've ever admitted this, I went to our accounting department and I wrote a check for $1,000 for the building project. And I gave it to accounting to deposit. And the next time a board member says, there's no money for the project, I said, this word is leaking out. We are already getting contributions. True story. True story. So let me just show you what was accomplished over the past several years. Am I going the wrong way? Here we are. This is what we used to call the Gibbons House. I don't know if you ever heard of Yule Gibbons. Yule Gibbons used to advertise grape nuts in the 1960s. And he'd ever say, every pine tree, some parts are edible. His widow asked Hughlin Casey if she could build her house on our property with the idea that when she died, we'd get the house. Hughlin said that was a great idea. Well, this woman, Frida, nice lady, lived a very, 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 very long time. Many years after Hughlin had died before she finally passed away. And we got the house. This is what the house looked like. I used to say we had the ugliest house on 68th Street. We need to start with something small, so we actually started with the Gibbons house. Here's the Gibbons house today. It's totally transformed. It's where we have our wellness programs, our youth programs, week-long intensives. Another building. This is our press building. This is where we have our shipping department, our computer services department, our prison program. Lots of people may not know this, but one of our service departments is the prison program. We send out 12,000 to 14,000 books a year free to prisoners. Spread entirely by word of mouth, the prison program gets more mail than any other department at ARE. You're about to see the same doors in the same building. That's the press building today. This is what the Edgar Casey Hospital looked like when I started. We didn't know at the time, but the front of the building had sunk 6 inches. When they had built the building back in 1928, they had put no insulation on the east side, figuring the rising sun could help warm the building to save money. I'm not kidding. The windows were all squared off. This is what the hospital looks like today. We have a restaurant up the stairs. You're welcome to come anytime. And along the way, we built our education center, which is the 11,000 square feet addition that has our Atlantic University, where we have a master's degree program, our Casey Riley School, where we've graduated probably 2,000 students from 21 different countries, and our Edgar Casey Foundation. Now, the reason I'm speaking to you about this is because I think what we accomplished at ARE is very much connected to finding personal prosperity in our own life. And there's really several keys that make this possible. And I'm going to go through these one at a time. One of the keys to understanding economic healing and personal prosperity. Economic challenges are the opportunity to apply spiritual or universal laws in everyday life. If part of our purpose of being in the earth is the opportunity to learn lessons, the universe actually has few things it can work with in order to help us learn those lessons. They can work with our health, our family members, or our career, or our finances. So very often when we're having economic challenges, it's because we're trying to learn something. The universe is trying to help us learn something. So there's an opportunity to learn. Free will does not mean that we get to choose what we're willing to learn. It only means we get to choose when we're willing to learn it. Another thing we learned along the way, the process of achieving economic healing can embody a worthwhile experience and personal growth. Regardless of the kind of challenge we have, relationship challenge, a work challenge, a financial challenge, generally those challenges make us draw upon resources we didn't know we had and stretch us and help us to grow, drawing upon resources that weren't there to begin with. And we generally can become a better person for having had the opportunities of challenges that come into our life. And then the last one, everything we think we possess is actually lent to us for the purpose of stewardship and service. Now, obviously, part of that stewardship entails taking care of ourselves, our family, those we're responsible for. But it also entails being of service to one another. So let's talk a little bit more about each one of these. Economic challenges are the opportunity to apply spiritual or universal laws in everyday life. You know, in the book of Matthew, chapter 6, Jesus is talking to the apostles about our attitudinal response when we give alms or tithes or donations to the poor. And he goes on to say, "Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body, what you shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body more than raiment? Behold the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are you not much better than they? Which of you can, by taking thought, can add one cubit unto his stature?" Now, what I think he's talking about here is very often when we get into economic challenges, the response we have is fear. And Jesus is saying, look at the birds of the air. There's no fear. They're not worrying about whether they're not going to eat. Instead, they use what they have in hand, and they do what they know to do. So when we have challenges with money, it's about having faith, using what you have in hand, and doing what you know to do. And the second line, which most of us overlook when we read this, about taking thought, you cannot get out of economic problems by your thought alone. Thinking is not going to solve it. Having affirmation, positive affirmations about prosperity alone is not going to solve it. It can help, but thinking alone does not solve economic challenges. On one occasion, Edgar Cayce was asked about this idea of how economic challenges, well, Cayce, in the readings said economic challenges can be our opportunity to apply spiritual principles in the earth. And apparently the group didn't quite believe that. So he went on to say, "Many would say, yea, this is beautiful. Yet it does not feed the hungry, nor clothe those that are naked, nor make shelter for those that are cold. Who is the representative of the Father in the earth? Hath he not committed unto humankind the keeping of his brother? Hast thou answered that question that has been of old in thine experience? Am I my brother's keeper?" In other words, how does God in spirit impact things physical? And the answer is through us, through each and every one of us. That's how divinity comes into the earth, through us. I often tell the staff at ARE, the entire world is actually an employee for God. Everybody in the earth is an employee for God. Our job is to bring divinity into the earth. Now, the challenge is, most of us have forgotten to clock in, and some of us are only working part-time. But that's really why we're here, to somehow bring the divinity of spirit into the earth. Now, I want to give you an example, and there's many, many, many examples I could choose, but just one example of how people, using what they have in hand and doing what they know to do, can literally transform the world. And this story is about Kiva. Kiva is considered one of the first micro-lending organizations. It was started by two college students in 2005, Matt Flannery and Jessica Lackey. And they had been traveling throughout Africa looking at poverty, and they came to the conclusion that poverty was not caused by people who were lazy or who weren't creative, but it was because they didn't have any capital. And that if somehow they could come up with a way to loan money to these people, they felt like they could help people get out of poverty. True story. So they got their money and the resources of their friends, and they pooled together $3,500 in 2005, and they made the first seven loans for $500 each. And the plan was when those loans get paid back, they'd loan it out again. And they created a website where the opportunity for people around the world could donate $25, only $25, and those $25 would be pooled and loaned out, and when it got paid back, it would be loaned out again. 10 years later, Kiva has had 1.3 million loans and loaned $740 million. That's global connectivity. Loans are made $25 a time. 80% of these loans are basically given to women entrepreneurs. Now listen to this. Kiva has a 98.97% repayment history. Now a bank would love to have 98.97% of their loans. It's about using what you have in hand and doing what you know to do. Now in addition to creating an opportunity for applying spiritual principles in the earth, The process of achieving economic healing can embody a worthwhile experience in personal growth. Eric Butterworth was a senior minister of Unity of New York, a long time involved with Unity Movement. He once wrote about financial challenges. All that really counts is what is happening within you. How are you reacting to the experience? Where is your faith? Within you is a limitless, unborn potential of creativity and substance. And the present experience can be your great opportunity to give birth to it. In my own experience, working with the city council and the neighbors and the staff and the board and the civic league, I can tell you that I had many, many, many dark nights of the soul. My wife, Mary, can tell you that I had many, many, many dark nights of the soul. Mary and I have been coming here with our son, Tyler, for some time incognito. I'm afraid those days are over. But anyway, some of the challenges with the neighbors, where we had neighbors on the street next to us who didn't want us to, quote unquote, take their park. We have a spot of land where we were going to put the education center on our property, and it was used by some neighbors to walk their dogs. And they were afraid that they wouldn't have a dog walking space, even though there's still plenty of property. One of the neighbors actually designed a placard for either side of his car that said, "Don't let ARE take our park," and was driving up and down Atlantic Avenue before the city council meeting. It was our property. We had other members. Members often would tell me, you know, we're so excited about what's going to happen here. And I said, well, great, we're really looking forward to your help and support. Well, I can't afford to help. And I explained to them, we're doing a community project. Most people think, you know, one person's going to write a check. It takes at least half as many people writing $25 checks, $50 checks, $100 checks, as it does for someone who's going to write a six-figure check. Everyone needs to participate. So time went on, and I spoke for 2 years, had meetings, went through a lot of stress, and in the process became better neighbors with the neighbors around us, more acquainted with the city council, more friendly with everyone around us. And so finally, in March of 2009, bless you, the good news, the project was approved by city council. The bad news, March 2009 was when the Dow hit 6,000, 6,300. And I got dozens of letters from ARE members around the world, why are you doing a building project during the Great Recession? We hadn't started out that way. We'd working for 2 years. But we kept working. And now the city told me something that was very challenging. It was 2009. I had to start the project by 2010. And I had to be done by 2014, and quote, you will never get this permission again, unquote. So time passed, and after the first year, I maybe had $100,000. This is a $7 million project. And I had to start, in my mind, by October of 2014. And my board was meeting in June, and I wanted to be able to tell the board I had $1 million in hand in order to start. So I remember one April, I was meeting with my development office. This is a true story, swear to God. And I said, I need to hear about $1 million between now and June for us to move forward. And 24 hours later, the phone rang. It was a lawyer from Michigan, a longtime member I had never heard of, had died and left us $1.5 million. So we were able to start the project. And I thought it was going to be smooth sailing from there on out. And it wasn't. And I had, as I told you, many, many, many experiences to age and have my hair turn white. And the worst came in the summer of 2013, where I had 6 weeks of the worst dark night of the soul I have ever experienced. So bad, and you can, this is a true story, I told my wife that if the angel of death came and asked me if I was ready, I would say yes, because I didn't want to take it anymore. And my challenge was this. The builder had said, if we're going to do the hospital, we have to start now. And I didn't have the money for it. So I thought to myself, I'm either going to go down in history as the CEO who had the opportunity to transform the Edgar Cayce Hospital and didn't, or I'm going to go down in history as the CEO who tried to build a hospital and bankrupted this work. So I didn't know what to do. And after 6 weeks of real depression, I finally decided to ask for guidance. And I wrote out the question to dream on, what would God have me do? And this is the dream I had. I dreamed I was in the ARE program in D.C., and I was at the back of the auditorium, and the Speaker of the House of Representatives came to the back of the room. Now, in the dream, when I woke up, I realized this is the Speaker of my house or my higher self. And the person asked me how I was doing. And in the dream, this person was a member of our Board of Trustees. They're not really, but in the dream, they were. And I went through my long litany of what was wrong, And at the end of it, I was finally quiet, and the Speaker of the House leaned forward, gave me a hug, and said, "We have every faith in you." And I woke up and I told the builder, "We're building this building." And so we moved out on faith. I had to borrow another $1 million to do it, but we went forward. Now, one more story about faith. Gladys McGarry, who's a longtime friend of mine, 95, medical doctor, her aunt was a woman missionary in India who ran an orphanage in the 1940s and 50s. And she decided, Aunt Belle decided, that in order to help the children, they really needed a cow. Rather than buying milk from local farmers, it'd be better to have their own cow. So one day someone came to visit Aunt Belle, and she saw the person saw Aunt Belle, and all the kids were busy building a stall and a big fence. And the visitor asked Aunt Belle, "What are you doing?" She said, "We're building a home for our cow." And the visitor looked around and says, "Well, where's the cow?" And Aunt Belle says, "All we have to do is build the home. God will send the cow." And he did. So it's about faith. The third principle that is sometimes most challenging for us to grapple with is that everything we possess is in fact lent to us for the purpose of stewardship and service. Elizabeth Hage, a spiritual teacher, writer, and author of several bestsellers, including Initiation, once said, "As a co-worker with a great plan, you must also understand what it means to possess nothing. Whether your task demands abject poverty of you or gives you the greatest wealth, you must always remember that nothing, absolutely nothing, ever or anywhere really belongs to you. On the contrary, everything is God's property, and from his property you receive something only for your actual needs. You will always receive as much as you need." And Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, called tithing the road to prosperity. Now, when I first started working with prosperity, I'll tell you a couple of quick examples. Years ago, many, many years ago, I was married the first time for a very brief period, a number of years. And I was making $6 an hour, and I was about to get married, and I was really worried about one thing. I had a $700 debt. Now, today, a $700 debt seems like a cakewalk. But back then, making $6 an hour, giving to ARE and my church, a $700 debt just about to get married seems like a lot to accomplish. But I kept working with my economic healing. I kept giving donations. I kept supporting the things that were important to me. And on the night of my wedding, before I got married, a person came down who I just kind of knew, not real well, but I knew them, gave me an envelope and said, "God told me to give this to you." So we got married. At the end of the wedding, I opened the envelope. It had $700 cash in it. It was the amount of the money I had owed. And later on, I was also having another challenge with my finances, but I kept working with tithing. And I remember one day, I opened the drawer, and I was worried about where I was going to get lunch. I was going to have to take lunch to work because I had no money. And I was about to shave my shaving drawer, and on top of my shaving stuff was a $100 bill folded. I have no idea how it got there. So I can tell you, the important thing, though, is to remember, you don't give money to get money. You give money in order to be an example of divine spirit in the earth, divine energy. Whatever we give out gives back to us. If we give out friendship, we get back friendship. If we give out love, we get back love. If we give out money, we get back love. We get back money. We always get back love. If you give out money for love, that's a whole nother lecture that I'll have to. We'll do that another week. What I'm trying to say is you can't pray over the collection plate and expect to have economic healing. You'll get back spiritual energy. Whatever you put in comes back to you. For the same reason, you can't plant seeds of corn and grow lettuce. There are universal laws that govern our experience in the earth. Whatever we put out comes back to us. Now, I'm convinced that whether we have the need for personal financial healing at work or home in the church, we have the ability truly to transform whatever the challenge might be just by working with some simple principles. Economic challenges are the opportunity to apply spiritual or universal laws in everyday life. Bless you. The process of achieving economic healing can embody a worthwhile experience in personal growth. And finally, everything we possess is in fact lent to us for the purpose of stewardship and service. So taken together, all this is about having faith, using what we have, doing what we know to do, understanding that any challenge entails us somehow learning something in the process, and being good stewards of all that has been entrusted to us. I encourage each and every one of us to pull together and become an integral part of helping to make the church's dreams for the future a reality. And along the way, I'm quite confident we will help manifest some personal prosperity in our own lives. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Let's take a moment to just move into meditation and allow some of these thoughts to sink deeply within us, into our consciousness. Let's close our eyes if that's comfortable and take a deep breath in and then release it. One more time, a deep breath in and let it go. We allow ourselves to settle into the presence of spirit within us, to feel this divine love that is us, and to let go. We know that truly the kingdom of heaven is within, and our work is to discover it. That everything we could ever want or need is provided for us, just as is true for the birds of the air and the lilies of the field. I invite you to take this moment now to tune in deeply to the core of your being, to the source of your abundance, the wellspring of all good in your life. Open your heart, settle into the divine presence, and listen to spirit for what is guiding you, what is yours to give. How do you begin with what you have and do what you know how to do? I invite you to listen to the voice of spirit, helping you discover the wealth within you and the joy of giving, as we tune in the silence. We know that we have within us an unending supply of all we could ever want. Love, prosperity, joy, comfort, strength. As we tap into this wellspring and give from it, we find that more flows to us. For truly we are doing God's work in the world. We are expressing as God, and in service to God. And for this blessing of being a channel for the expression of the highest good in our lives and in our world, we are so grateful, so deeply grateful. Thank you, God. And so it is. Amen.